Sometimes it seems like it used to be more fun for me to read the Bible than it is now. How's that for an inspiring start to a sermon? But do you have an idea of what I mean, especially when it comes to a story like David and Goliath? As a child, it was a great story about an underdog defeating a giant, and there was even a fun song to go with it. Only a boy named David, only a little stone. The stone went round and round and round and round, and the giant came tumbling down. Do you know that one? It was great fun to sing. But the thing is, now it's not so much fun for me. Now I see much more of the violence in the story, the glorifying of the violence. I see cycles of conflict and revenge and violence which never seem to stop. And that's not as much fun. No fun songs to sing about that. Is that fair to take a story of an unlikely hero who saves the day and then bring to it, you could say impose on it, our contemporary issues of violence and war? I don't know. But I know I'm okay with raising the question without having all the answers. Because it seems to us to be important for us too to wrestle with the violence and how we are a part of such violence. Perhaps part of the importance of a story like David and Goliath is that it portrays just how complicated it is to live faithfully in the midst of threat and violence. And to recognize that with David or with anyone else, violence is no quick fix. There's just more violence. This could be the least fun sermon ever. But it is with thoughts like that that I come to the passage from 2 Corinthians that David read. As Paul writes to the early church community, and we come across this peculiar phrase, the weapons of righteousness. The weapons of righteousness? Did you know that was in the Bible? The weapons of righteousness for the right hand and for the left, double-fisted weapons of righteousness. And part of my reaction is to think, really? We even have to make righteousness into a weapon? But then it occurs to me, and I just wonder if the Apostle Paul is being ironic here. Not a little ironic, but entirely 100% absolutely ironic with this image of weapons of righteousness. I wonder if Paul is even being just a little bit funny here. That Paul wants his readers to break into a wry smile and an ironic little chuckle when they hear that what is available to them are the weapons of righteousness for both hands. Woo! Paul's making a contrast here. And this peculiar image he uses is something for us to pay attention to because it has something to say for people of faith who live in a world of weapons and violence. Because let's get our bearings on what the circumstances were for the Apostle Paul. And to put it simply, it was not easy. I know that Paul can have a flair for the dramatic, especially when it comes to false humility. But in this passage, I think it's a genuine, poignant moment as Paul expresses the perseverance and struggle of carrying the good news of Jesus Christ to communities near and far. Afflictions, hardships, calamities, beatings, imprisonments, riots, labors, sleepless nights, hunger. There is nothing easy about what Paul is a part of. And this challenge is carried out in the midst of an empire that is the most militarized, weaponized global power ever known. The Roman Empire has absolute power and control, and it is not afraid to use it. A life of great challenge in the midst of an empire of weaponized power. Well, don't you worry, Paul says. We have weapons too. Purity, knowledge, patience, kindness, holiness of spirit, genuine love, truthful speech, the power of God. Why, that's enough weapons for both the right hand and the left. But after a wry smile about that, we hear that these weapons are indeed enough. Enough for Paul to stay true to his calling, to know joy, he says, to know true life, to be able to say that he is rich and possesses everything. These turn out to be quite the weapons indeed. Well, what do we make of this from Paul? We could make of it that he is delusional, that he is a little blip of pie in the sky grandiosity whose ironic weapons are a feeble attempt to be relevant in a world truly controlled by the weapons of empire which exert utter power and control. You could make that of it. Some do. Sometimes I feel that way. But we are called to choose something different, to see what Paul is saying in a way that calls us to claim the same truth. Today, in our time, we, like Paul and the early church, face the challenge of living in the midst of a militarized empire, using its power to control others' lives, using its resources to impose its will and protect its domination. But unlike then, we also face the challenge of seeing how we are a part of that empire, what power we have that is exerted over and diminishes others, so that even more so for us, we must choose this day what weapons, what power we believe in. Do we believe in the power of baptism? The waters of baptism in which God claims our true selves. The waters of baptism in which we are called to see each person as a reflection of God's grace. How do you think the powers of baptism stack up against the powers of empire? It's the question this day. Do we believe in the power of welcome, of hospitality, of room for all, of celebration of all? The power of persistence and patience, of knowledge and humility, of pronouns and playfulness, of kindness and compassion? How do those powers stack up in your mind against the violence of this world? Do we believe in the power of communion? Of a table where the host nourishes us in the riches of true life and the joy of community. A table which connects us to neighbors near and far. A table of justice which calls us to feed all God's children. Is that the power we trust in? Do we believe in the power of prayer? Not prayer disconnected from action, but prayer that grounds us in the truth that nothing is more powerful in this world than God's love. Prayer that draws on the gifts of the Spirit which empower us as people of peace, of shalom. Is that the power we look to together? The power of empire. Weapons and violence, security and control, fear and scarcity, laws and policies which serve dominance and division, that is the power of our world, a power we participate in and perpetuate at times as both citizens and as the church. A power of empire that even invokes the name of God at times and which tells us that's just the way it is. Or the powers of baptism and welcome, of table and prayer. The contrast, people of God, could not be more stark. And we could understand how some find the powers we profess here to be naive at best and pathetic at worst. We could understand how sometimes that's hard for us to trust too. But I was thinking to follow the lead of an old song. Only a little church named Hope, only some weapons of righteousness. But we spread those weapons of righteousness round and round and round and round, and a giant comes tumbling down? If you don't see a lot of giants tumbling, then you have to look for this. Treated as imposters yet true, as unknown yet well known, as dying yet alive, as punished yet not killed, as sorrowful yet always rejoicing, as poor yet making rich, as having nothing and yet possessing everything, the power to be faithful and to trust in God's power. We are challenged by our world. Choose your weapons. We are called by God this day. Choose your weapons. And together today, we will trust in the power of God present in the font and in welcome at the table and in prayer. We will trust that the power of God's love and grace is enough for us and for all and for God's world. Amen.